If you want to hear about the opportunities that we are presenting to our investors, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club. We scour for the best opportunities and present those only to folks inside the club, and that is the only way you'll hear about our deals and what we're working on. We'd love for you to be a part. Again, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club.
Nothing is as important as you think it is while you're thinking about it. In other words, you don't need no drama. If something is becoming a burden to you, it's not worth the rate of return if it's causing you anxiety or insanity.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Mark Willis is a man on a mission to help you think differently about your money, your economy, and your future. Mark is a certified financial planner, a three-time number one best-selling author, and owner of Lake Growth Financial Services, a financial firm in Chicago, Illinois. As co-host of the Not Your Average Financial Podcast, he shares some of his strategies for investing in real estate, paying for college without going broke, and creating an income in retirement you will not outlive. Mark works with people who want to grow their wealth in ways that are safe and predictable to become their own source of financing and create tax-free income in retirement. Mark, welcome to the show.
Hey, man. So glad to be on your show, Sam. Thanks so much for having me.
Hey, the pleasure is all mine. You know, the same stories I ask everybody who comes on is where'd you start? Where are you now? And how'd you get there? But would love to hear that story through the lens of now you being a certified financial planner.
I certainly wasn't born that way. That's for sure. You know, I didn't grow up with much of a financial education at all. It's all a quick kid story. So there was a paper bag in my drawer with a couple dollars in it, coins and whatever, allowance and whatever. And it built up to about 50 bucks as a kid. And my mom said, hey, you know, it's time to teach this little kid about checking accounts. So we took that little paper bag to the bank. And, you know, the job was for me to hand over all of my money to this stranger. That was the job. I was unimpressed with what I was being offered there. I mean, here's this guy. He's going to take everything I've ever earned in my lifetime and give me what? Give me assurance that I can go get it again. And surprisingly, we're not in that much of a different situation today. You know, the average bank in 2020 had to keep only a fraction of the reserves that we all deposit and think we have in those banks. You know, before the pandemic, it was about 10% for big banks that they had to keep on reserve. So if you had $1,000 in the bank, only $100 was actually in the vault. The other 900 had been lent out to the guy behind you in line asking for a loan. And guess what? The bank is making a pretty penny off that. I mean, how much money, how much skin in the game did they have on that transaction? They're paying Sam a penny and a half and they're charging me 10% or whatever.
You're getting a penny and a half on your...
Oh, man.
You get a percent and a half. Wow, that's impressive.
Yeah. Yeah, only the most generous banks you got to deal with, right? Well, now, as of 2020, the reserve requirements are 0%. 0%. So that means money is being created out of nowhere and limitless profits abound for banks. So wouldn't you know, in the midst of this terrible experience that the world has gone through, banks are making out like, well, banks. Okay. There's a long history here with my own story with money, but we started out life in college and past college. I brought to the marriage a wonderful second spouse. Her name was Sally Mae. And just like you'd expect, Sally was not welcome in the marriage, but we certainly had our drubbings trying to get rid of her. And for a long time, we did it the old-fashioned way. Then we discovered a strategy called bank on yourself that helped us not only pay off the debt, but actually build real wealth at the exact same time. It allowed us to become better than debt-free. That got me so interested in money. Finding that particular concept got me so pumped up about finances and finding leverage points that, like financial jujitsu, you know, we turn the problem of this debt into an opportunity to build wealth. That kind of concept got me so pumped, Sam, that I pursued the CFP designation and found 450 plus financial parking spots we can all put our money, everything from, you know, checking accounts to dynastic trusts to annuities to, you know, real estate investing to anything else that the mind could conceive of. And then you can mash those together to create millions of places you could put your money. And for most Americans, the hardest problem after living on less than we make, which is the hardest problem for all of us, but the second hardest problem is, what do I need my money to do for me? And clarity, Sam, is the biggest problem or obstacle or hurdle to achieving what we want. Until we know exactly what we want, getting clear on that, until we have that figured out, Everything else is basically us getting sold somebody else's bill of goods.
Yeah, that's interesting. How did you craft your 450 some odd places? How did you come up with that list?
Oh yeah, well, you know, it's pretty easy to do. As you're reading through the textbooks to get your CFP designation, I just started creating a little checklist for myself. Here's the 20 things that my wife and I said we wanted our money doing for us. And I guess that's an important sidebar. Take a moment. If you get nothing else out of this episode, take 10, 20 minutes, an hour, whatever, journal about the characteristics of what you want your money doing for you. Don't listen to me. Don't listen to anybody tell you what you should be doing with your money. Ask yourself what you should be doing with your money and what characteristics or attributes you want your money to have. Pretend you're Pope of money for the day. Pretend you could just wave a magic wand and create a brand new financial instrument. They do this all the time. You know, somebody came up with the 401k. God didn't, you know, write it on tablet of stone and bring it down from the mountain, right? The 401k was created in 1981. And essentially, the first 401k was issued in 1981. And essentially, that means the 401k is so new, it's not even old enough to retire yet. And yet, we all think it's this grand, you know, created on the sixth day kind of financial vehicle that we all should just be putting our money into. And yet, somebody had to come up with it. So maybe you, in a 20 minutes, 50 minutes, whatever, sit down, think about what you want your money doing for you, and then we can apply it to certain labels. I think we have so much bias toward, you know, whether it's whole life insurance or whether it's savings accounts or whether it's annuities or whether it's real estate. We all have so much bias toward financial vehicles that we've heard about on the radio or some podcast that oftentimes we forget to say, well, what's the function? I don't care what you call my money, as long as it does what I want it to do.
What are some answers? Give me some example answers that people write down on what they want their money to do.
Yeah, great. Yeah, my own little list. I'll give you a couple of mine. Your mileage may vary. I wanted easy access to cash. I knew, especially as a business owner, I was going to need to have liquid access to funds for emergencies and opportunities. If I was going to finance some real estate purchases, if I was going to finance a business that I'd hope to open, I needed little cost or restrictions to getting access to my money. So that was maybe one. Another was I wanted a guarantee of some sort of predictable yield on my results. Again, I'm just waving my magic wand here. I don't have any precognition of what, if this is even legal or if it even exists, but if I could get a guaranteed rate of return on my cash, that'd be pretty cool. And I wanted it to be safe, meaning I wanted the last year's earnings to not get vaporized because somebody sneezed the wrong way on Wall Street this year. You know, like Coca-Cola stock or whatever, Tesla stock, maybe it gives us a nice juicy dividend this year, but they can take it away next year if the market crashes, right? If I reinvest that dividend. So I wanted a principal protected increase on my money every single year. Why? So I could have a plan. Plans are hard to come by, especially when we're talking about the future. What's that Niels Bohr quote? He says, a prediction is very difficult, especially when it involves the future. So I wanted it to be tax deferred. You know, savings accounts are taxable every year. Right. So I want some sort of tax deferred vehicle. But, and crucially, I also wanted it to be tax free. So I'm just trying to mash together these two different, maybe seemingly opposing ideas. I wanted it to be tax deferred and tax free. I wanted the zebra of zebras, if I could find one. One more, how about I wanted it to be creditor protected, meaning I wanted it to not get exposed if I was to be ever sued by a tenant in one of my real estate deals. I never wanted anything to like come get it if I ever went through a financial difficulty, like a bankruptcy, God forbid. So I wanted it to be off that table of negotiation if I ever, you know, was in a court, for example. I don't ever expect to be, but guys, you got to just believe me when I say, if you're in real estate, it's a matter of when, not if. So you need your money, at least I needed my money, to be off that table and safely protected from creditors and predators. You know, Sam, I'm curious, does this spark any ideas for you? Anything you'd like to, you know, either reaffirm there or add to the list?
Well, no, I mean, you know, that's, and again, I think I appreciate the fact that you're saying you're just waving your magic wand.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I'm listening to this list and I'm going, all right, well, you can get a few of those, but it's, you're not going to get all of them. So when you took that list, so say, were you able to divide up, and let's just ask you personally, were you able to divide your money into different buckets maybe that satisfied all of those things on different fronts?
Well, you know, you're right. Like a fish out of water, if you put your money in the wrong environment, your money's dead, right? You got to put your money in the right environment. And most people just, again, we act without thinking. We do what we're told, and we put our money into things that take financial control away from us. Mm. I'm talking about 401ks and IRAs, right? Most people, if you ask them the question, Sam, hey, do you think taxes are going to be lower or higher in the future? Most people would tell you, well, yeah, taxes over my lifetime, they're going to go up.
Right.
And yet we're putting all this money into tax deferred, meaning wait until later taxes, right? Real estate, great financial asset, as old as the pyramids. But again, it takes a lot of the control away from us. If the money is in the drywall, we have to get and beg a nice banker to get the money back out again. Okay. So as wonderful as real estate can be for tax advantages and other reasons, it does have its hurdles that we have to conceive of and work on. So it has to be, you're right. It has to be a well-crafted, thought out, diversified plan. But I feel like too many people think diversified and they think, oh, I've got 12 mutual funds. That'll do me. You know, that checks the diversification box. But, you know, Sam, you know, if all of my eggs, let's say all my little eggs are in 12 baskets, but they're all on the same truck and that truck goes over a cliff, what good did all of my diversification do?
Right. Absolutely not. Sure.
So the key there is non-correlated assets. That's the $20 cocktail term there. And one of my aha moments was realizing that whole life insurance properly designed, if it's designed the bank on yourself way, meets every single one of the little checklist items that I personally had. It grows guaranteed. It's tax deferred every year. It's available to me tax free. I can access the money for any reason. I can send my little girl to Disney World, or I can invest in real estate. I can fix up my own kitchen, or I can take it out tax free as a stream of income in my retirement that I cannot outlive. It's outside of the risk of getting sued or creditors and predators coming after it. It was like my jaw was dropped because all I heard was Dave Ramsey's voice in my ears as I was reading about whole life insurance of all things in the financial universe. But yet it satisfied what I was looking for. It even gave me a decent rate of return, nothing special, you know, but it beat inflation. And it was sort of like the Swiss Army knife in the financial toolbox. And since then, I've used it again to pay off all my debts, to invest in real estate. So it shockingly has a place, I think, in more people's portfolios than currently own it.
Yeah, I could see that. I could see that. And that being weighted inside of a greater plan? Or did you just take everything and put it inside of a whole life policy and then buy everything inside your whole life policy?
Well, there you go. That's interesting. No, of course, you want to look at this from the context of a financial analysis that you do with a client. And everything we work on looks at it from a holistic standpoint, from the estate plan down to your budget, to your auto insurance and across, over to, you know, insurance and investments. But think of it this way. One of the key shocker points for me when I was looking into this concept was when I put money into one of these whole life policies, specifically designed the bank on yourself way, there's a lot of knockoffs out there that we really need to talk about. But if it's inside one of these policies, now I am the bank for myself. And when I borrow against my policy, like a line of credit, my policy will continue to earn and grow as if I had not touched the money. Now, let's stop and just hear that again, because that's bananas. And it eventually will come back to how I use this for my real estate deals and how our clients do. So if I've got, let's just say, $250,000 in cash value, that's the stuff I can spend and use on this side of the grass. If I've got $250,000 in cash value in one of these policies, Sam, and I borrow out $100,000 to put as a down payment or as a syndication opportunity comes my way, whatever, that year, you know, I've got my $100,000, I put it into the syndication deal. And yet, my policy will give me a full guaranteed increase plus dividends on top of that on all $250,000 as if I hadn't touched the money. And I've got my syndication working for me too. So didn't that just increase my rate of return, my yield, without any additional market risk? Yeah. So for me, it's like, okay, this is my opportunity fund. I view my policies like the parking spot in between my deals. That's how I personally use my policies. I use it like my contingency cash or my opportunity fund and my parking space in between my deals. Certainly, I've got a checking account, I've got investments, I've got real estate, I've got annuities, I've got real estate syndication deals and more. But this is the vast majority of where I keep my capital in between my opportunities. Does that kind of clarification make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Does it continue to grow? I know we're getting in the weeds here on this, but I'm just curious. I can't help but ask. Does it continue to grow because your policy is charging you interest on the loan that you took out?
Yes, correct. You're using a policy loan, which is written right into the contract.
Right.
It's not unlike a HELOC in that your house grows, whether you have a HELOC on it or not, right? The difference is homes aren't guaranteed to grow. The policy is. The line of credit can be rescinded or called at the bank because, again, we're back in their pocket over there. With the policy, it's unilaterally written right into a contract that can't be rescinded. So you've got a guaranteed line of credit that grows every year for the rest of your life. That's pretty cool. And yes, the loan interest is what makes this whole thing, you know, without taxes due. So I can get both principal and gains out of my policy with no taxes due, much like a Roth IRA, but without all the restrictions of Roth IRAs. So there is interest. However, the key word here is arbitrage. So without getting too deep in the weeds, the interest on policy loans is far less. Yeah, it might be over 4 years, the loan might end up being about 2% APR, whereas your policy is doing much greater than that. I had a guy one time, he borrowed out 350 grand to buy some real estate deals. He paid back the loan over 5 years. The interest was 38,000 bucks, which works out to about 1.9% APR. In the meantime, he earned interest, the guaranteed interest plus dividends equaled 120,000 bucks. So let's kind of do the math there. He paid 38 grand to borrow this cash, 1.9%. He earned at the same time 120 grand. So, you know, tell me, you know, like if that was your deal, how many times would you do that?
Sure, every day.
Yeah, right.
But does that 38 grand go back to his policy balance or does that go back to the insurance company?
You might say it's a part of that 120 grand that he received. He is the co-owner of that insurance company. Again, if it's designed the bank on yourself way, not all whole life is created equal here,
right?
But it's a mutually owned life insurance company. So it's part of the profits of that insurance company. And indirectly, although you could say you can net it out, 120 minus 38, whatever that is his net arbitrage to himself.
Right. Yeah. No, he's still making money.
Yeah. Not a free opportunity though. There's no get rich overnight here. You know, there's obviously insurance costs, this cost to borrow the money. But, you know, to me, it's a powerful way to, get access to capital, especially when banks, not if, but when banks stop, you know, being generous here, maybe before too long, it's going to be the guys and gals who have liquid guaranteed capital that can come to closing with cash.
That is it. You have hit something on the head there. So let's transition then and hear, what are you advising people in this environment? What are you seeing people buy in real estate and where are you advising people go right now?
Yeah, well, you know, I'd say one of the best pieces of advice is to do it scared. You know, the best investment is the one you actually do. Too many people, I feel like, analyze to death some deal until it's out of their opportunity, right? I have found, I think you had a recent guest on that talked about mobile home parks. I think affordable housing is the future in the midst of a lot of this construction material shortage that we're experiencing. I think lumber is going to continue to climb. I think others are going to continue to climb here. And I think we're going to continue to need blue collar housing and all the opportunities there, opportunity zones, mobile home parks, you know, B and C class. So I'd say there's some real opportunity there if you have the capital to pursue it. I'd say one last little more of a principle or a proverb that I just live my life by, Sam, is nothing is as important as you think it is while you're thinking about it. Nothing is as important as you think it is while you're thinking about it. In other words, you don't need no drama.
Right.
You know, you don't need no drama. If something is becoming a burden to you, it's not worth the rate of return if it's causing you anxiety or insanity. So that's my piece of advice for aspiring investors.
Yeah. No, that's good. And what that was going to be my one question for you. One of the four is you know, what is one piece of advice you give to an aspiring investor? So you've stolen that one. But
okay. Man. I'll give you something back.
All right. No, that's all good. So yeah, and I guess when you see what your clients are currently investing in real estate, I like the idea where you said, you know, whatever you do, you should slightly do it scared, you know, right now. But what are some things you see? What are some active investments you see people making that you are saying, hey, that's probably a good idea right now in real estate?
Right. Oh, and in real estate specifically, there's, again, the space that I don't see a lot of people investing in that I think could be is the creative spots for green investing. I think this administration, in this presidential administration, for good or ill, I think is pouring a lot of their energy into renewables. And so, you know, if you remember billboards back in the 80s, 70s, they were like some of the hottest real estate you could find.
Right.
So solar and also wind turbine, I think are going to be some of the biggest opportunities in the next decade. Do I know that for sure? No, my batteries and my crystal ball aren't working, but that's a great place you might look for a unused or not your average place for real estate investing.
Yeah, no, that is very, very interesting that you say that. And it's interesting to see. I don't know, you know, how this will shake out, because, you know, there is a ton of money getting poured into that. But where, in the end, where they funnel all this is just kind of, it's unknown. It's absolutely unknown. What are some mistakes you see people making in their financial planning?
Well, I think the biggest issue I see is the lack of clarity. Mm. And so building off of your own desire rather than chasing after what someone else told you to do. I don't care if it's a really cool bank on yourself designed whole life policy or a solar panel farm, you know, or something else you may have heard on a radio show. Get clear on what you want your money doing for you. You know, I'd say the four most dangerous words in the financial universe are "do it for me." Do it for me. And too much of the time we abdicate our responsibility to care more for our money. And if somebody else cares more about your money than you do, you're about to lose in that scenario, right? So yeah, I'd say the best thing you could probably chase after first.
Right. Yeah. Clarity. Absolutely. Clarity is, that's one of those things that, it just takes time. It takes time and some diligence to sit down and write it out. Like you said, you said that at the beginning. So that's a great point. Mark, let's jump here into the final four. You stole my first one.
I can give you something else. I'll give you a bonus if you want to.
Yeah, here's a bonus round. What is one piece of advice or another piece of advice for you that you would give to an aspiring investor?
Right on. Control the banking function in your life. If you control the banking function, how you finance or buy things with cash, then everything else becomes easier. It's the old Gary Keller. He says, what's the one thing you can do? And I'll say, what's the one thing you can do with your money such that by doing it, everything else becomes easier or unnecessary? Be the bank. You know, sit behind the banker's desk. I think we're sitting on the wrong side of the banker's desk. And if you can control the environment where your money lives, back to the fish in the water, if you can control the environment, then you're going to win. If banks control the environment where your money lives, they're going to win every single time.
Right. No, that's great. That is great. When it comes to investing in yourself, what is one thing you're doing to stay on top of your game?
Oh, besides the required continuing education credits they force you to do. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. Good. Well, I've been learning things outside of my field. I think that's one of the most fun things a podcaster can do, you know, is to research areas outside of your specific expertise. Clients are bringing tons of ideas to me lately, which has been, you know, part of the generative process we do with clients. It's a collaboration between the client's ideas and what I know of the financial universe, and then sparks fly, which is a lot of fun. But I'll say too, read a book outside of your area. History books are great. Autobiographies, great. I'm learning MMA, mixed martial arts, and just kind of the rules behind that right now. It's been a fun way to kind of create some metaphors for podcast content, but also our conversations with clients.
Right. That's absolutely fascinating. Yeah, because we can get so narrowly focused on one thing, real estate or whatever it might be, that you kind of lose the skills that are developed when you look outside of your sphere. So that's super cool. When it comes to investing in the world, what is one way you're making the world a better place?
Well, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things that we do privately, charities that we support and so forth. But publicly, I'll just say my wife and I, we really were impacted in a big way by the debt that we had to overcome just to get to zero, just to get to the starting line of our financial life. So we offer free coaching to those that are in debt and just need to look over some things and to get a game plan set up and ready to go for them. So we do that on a public nature. Folks can reach out to us and we'll help them hopefully break free to something that's better than just debt-free.
Right. No, that's super cool. That is super cool. And yeah, and especially, you know, in the last 18 months, you know, personal debt is just piling up. So services like yours will be in high demand. That's for sure. Mark, thanks so much for coming on the show. If our listeners want to get in touch with you, what is the best way to do that?
We've got our podcast, Not Your Average Financial Podcast. However, if you want to get on my calendar or say hello or just be involved in everything, we put it all on a website, bit.ly/markbanking. That's bit.ly/markbanking.
Mark, thanks so much. Appreciate it. Have a great day.
Yeah, you too, Sam. Thanks.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much and hope to catch you on the next episode.